Hey, movers, it's Amy. Welcome to episode 28, season 2 of Women Making Moves. This particular episode, my guest Geraldine and I were having some technical difficulties as we were dialing into each other from way across the world. So I ask for your patience and your commitment to hearing this incredible conversation and the work that Geraldine is doing in Nigeria and across the world. And just bear with us as we move through some of the difficulties. I appreciate you listening. Thank you. Hi, welcome back to Women Making Moves, where we celebrate the moves that women are making. My name is Amy Pons. I'm a master certified life coach and an energy healer. I'm joined today with Geraldine Neka Okoye. Geraldine is a postgraduate student of nuclear physics at Ahmadu Bello University, Zaria, Nigeria. She's the program lead of Step Up Nuclear and host of a Woman in Nuclear podcast. Geraldine, welcome.
Thank you very much.
How are you feeling today?
Doing very fine. How about you?
I have a little bit of nerves from my dog having surgery, but he hopefully is coming home today. So. Yeah, you know, that's a little bit on my heart. I appreciate you asking.
I understand.
I'd love to pick up, start again of what we talked about last time, which is you are an expert and pioneer as a woman in nuclear energy. So do you want to start by just giving us an overview of what that looks like for you on a day-to-day basis? Because one of the things we talked about last time was that there's so much misconception, of course, worldwide about nuclear. And we're going to get into that, of course. But like, what does your day-to-day look like as an expert in nuclear?
So basically, I am a postgraduate student. So I do not have an ideal day-to-day activity because I am not in the industry. People in the industry, in the government, under the nuclear industry, could have an ideal day-to-day experience. But as a student, I can only give my day-to-day experience from a student's perspective. And as a postgraduate student, it's quite different. My day-to-day isn't as busy as you would think for an undergraduate student. So I have a lot of free time at hand, and I cannot share an experience that you would use as a benchmark for other women in the nuclear industry, considering that I am a student. But that being said, my day-to-day is just here and there, trying to see how to make the world better and get more people to accept the application of nuclear science and technology. So we know the misconceptions we talked about earlier about nuclear science and technology. I told you that it's always about misinformation or lack of information. So in my only two way, I try to address the misinformation and lack of information. That this is what I do together with my normal activity as a postgraduate student. My research work as a postgraduate student doesn't entail a whole lot of experiments, as you would imagine. I am working under simulation and modeling, so I spend more time with my computers, trying to have an ideal situation of a nuclear power plant run on my computer, then test for malfunctions and see how the reactor system responds to it. So that's basically my day-to-day activity.
And when do you graduate?
Hopefully September of this year.
That's amazing. And what do you want to do next?
Well, a whole lot of things to consider. I'm not saying I'm not someone who don't plan. Of course, I am so much invested in planning, but then you consider the fact that you may be making a plan and the universe has something else in stock for you. So I always make a provision for the universe plan while I make my own plan. So very well for me, I am actually looking to go into the industry. I was initially looking at going further to a doctorate program, but as it is now, I think I want to go into the industry to, at this point, begin to apply what I have worked. I used to work in the IT industry, before I began my postgraduate program. So I would want to be a part of an innovation where there will be a merger with the IT industry and the nuclear industry. It's one thing I have seen recently is the artificial intelligence as a whole, and that is my major area of interest for now, artificial intelligence. And I hope to see how that can be applied into the nuclear industry to automate the process. And we know with the amount of energy required to run data centers, we are hopeful that nuclear power would provide a stable and reliable base load to run the data centers required to put up artificial intelligence. So the role of artificial intelligence with the nuclear energy, it's a symbiotic relationship where one is automating the other. And while artificial intelligence is automating nuclear energy is powering artificial intelligence. So I want to be in that mix. I want to be part of the innovation that will bring that to light. So that's what I'm hoping to go.
That's beautiful. And I also love so much that you said, who knows where we'll be even next week, right?
Exactly.
For me, as an energy healer, energy coach, I usher in the divine feminine, which is flowing, trusting, believing in the universe and what has
Oh.
in store for us. And
Yeah.
as you know, this world, today's society has been skewed only in the masculine, which is the doing, the structure, the power, the money.
Yes.
And so I love that you said that because me as a business owner, I certainly set intentions for my business, and I also flow into what am I creating? What do I want to do next to bring more of that unique brilliance of what I have to the world? And I leverage the divine feminine in the structure that's set up to be able to birth that into the world, to release it into the world. So I love that you said that because so aligned. Who knows? That's the beautiful part.
You know, when I was way younger, I had this mentality of putting out a structured path for my life.
Yeah.
You know, at 15, I should be this. At 22,
Yes.
I should be this. At 25, I should be this. But growing and experiencing life, I find out that as a human, you can only make your plan. There are higher energy, higher powers that determine the outcome of your activities. And sometimes, because as a human, you are limited with what you can see in the universe or how the universe works, you can only make your plan based on your ability. So, because of that, I began to appreciate my limitations as human and then make a contingency space or plan. I'm like, okay, this is what I want to do, but if the universe wants me to go this way, I should be fluid enough to divert and then go with the flow. So I think that's one thing I've learned, age and experience.
That's beautiful that you trust that because that's the biggest hurdle is to trust when you're getting a call to go somewhere
Yes.
else. And a client of mine just sent me a video yesterday of this person explaining as humans, we have kind of three planes of understanding, spiritual, intellect, and physical body. And because we get here on this plane and we're like, okay, if I can't see it, touch it, like then it's not real. And like you go so far into that. And what ends up happening, and this is why I love my work as an energy coach, I help humanity understand that co-creating with the universe, and by the way, it could be universe, God, creator, source, whomever that
Yeah,
higher,
whatever you believe
whatever
in.
that is, right? It's both the simplest thing that we can do and also the hardest thing we can do to surrender
It's
and
actually
flow.
one of the hardest things to do.
Well, what I mean by that is like, when I say simplest, I mean I could set an intention where like, huh, I kind of want a donut later. And
Yeah.
I have a busy day and I don't have any idea how I would get a donut. And then somehow magically, right, as it were magically, a donut somehow appears in my pathway. That's what I mean
Yeah.
by it's the simplest, but to your point, yes, that's why I say it's both simple and hard. And
Yeah.
when you trust that, as humans, we're so quick to over-engineer that we
Yeah.
almost tell the universe like, "Oh, I know better than you. I got this." Ah,
Yeah, exactly.
oh, and then it's like, "Oh, that's not what I ordered." Well, right. So you got to go back and do the work inward and say, "Okay, Let me get back into myself, my heart, my soul, and see what I'm here to do. So anyway, thank you for sharing that as well, that we're both on that plane. So tell me, as a, I would call myself, I guess, a layman, which is a layman that doesn't know very much about nuclear energy. If you could give an overview, I know, right, it's like an overview of nuclear energy, but just if you were to explain this to a kindergartner, how would you explain nuclear energy and the nuclear movement
How would I explain the energy?
to a kindergartner? I'm the kindergartner.
So, we need electricity. We very much do need electricity. And we are also battling with the climate problem. We used to use fossil fuel, coal, to power our electricity. And we can't do without electricity. We can't do without energy sources. The industries, the transportation, basically everything that makes life seamless depends on electricity. Depends on energy. Let me use a more unified word, energy. So we need to address the climate issue at the same time, not go short on our energy supply. So if we decide to go with wind, that's good. That's a very good idea. But we have a problem with wind. There are locations that can't support wind turbines to
Wind, got it.
provide stable electricity. Wind is seasonal. There are seasons where you have enough wind. There are seasons where you do not have enough wind. There are times of the day you have enough, and there are times of the day you have to compromise on the quantity of electricity you get because your wind turbine is not working at the optimal level. Then we talk about solar. Yeah, we here in Africa, we have a whole lot of it to. But then when you compare the way you look at the economics of solar, I am not so much into energy economy. So I'm just going to also say this on a layman terms. You find out that you can't run solar 24/7 in an industry or in a heavily equipped residential apartment. But you need solar because you do not want to run fossil fuel. You do not want to run coal plants. You need solar. You need wind. But these two guys are not enough to supplement coal. So that is where nuclear comes in. People argue about hydro very well. I mean, they say about 72% of the world is made up of water. So, of course, why not use hydro? But we understand that the tides and waves of water is also seasonal. There are times when the flow isn't enough to generate electricity. You don't just build a hydro plant on every water body. You have to be selective. It involves a lot of geopolitics, a lot of regional diplomacy. I will give you an example of Nigeria. Nigeria dammed a particular river called River Niger. Now, for the sake of Nigeria damming River Niger, Nigeria will have to supply electricity to Niger Republic. And I think Burkina Faso, where the source of the river is, that is the agreement. Because, of course, Burkina Faso could just dam it over there and Nigeria wouldn't have electricity. Niger Republic could just dam it in their country, supply electricity to Burkina Faso, and Nigeria would not have hydropower. But you see that while hydropower is a very good alternative, a whole lot of regional geopolitics is involved. But when you come to nuclear, you just get a space in your country. You construct a nuclear power plant. Come rain, come sunshine, it is running. Irrespective of the season of the year, it's running in optimal capacity. Now we have even more newer innovations in terms which are called generations of nuclear power plants. So you don't even have to go off for maintenance purposes. So 24/7, you have a stable base load of electricity. Now, people come to argue about the economics of nuclear power plants. We talk about how economically demanding it is in terms of initial cost implications. Yeah, very well. But we in the nuclear industry look at nuclear power plants from the economics of scale. You build a nuclear power plant, it costs you an arm and a leg to get it rolling. But you are sure that for the next 60 to 75 years, you have nothing to worry about in terms of electricity. All you need to do is maintain your power plant. And maintenance is not even done on a daily basis. It's not even done on a monthly basis. I think 20 years is what it takes for an overall maintenance of a nuclear power plant. And even while maintenance is ongoing, your plant is up and running. So when you are looking for a stable base load of electricity, you're looking for a reliable electricity that is irrespective of the time and season of the year, you think nuclear energy. If you're looking for a cheap energy in the long run, if you're looking to power industries that demand a lot of kilowatts of electricity for every process in the industry, you think of nuclear energy because that is the only alternative to coal energy in terms of running industries. You can't run industries on solar. You can't run industries on wind. No. You need something as stable and reliable as coal. But if you think sustainability and think of the climate crisis, at that point you begin to think of nuclear energy. So that's just basically nuclear energy
Oh,
to
that's
me in
good.
general.
That's a great explanation. So while wind, water, and solar are certainly options for a smaller scale, the only option right
Yes,
now
very
is
well.
like a of a
Yes.
grand scale would be nuclear. Thank you
Yes.
for that. I appreciate that. And as we spoke last time, when we hear nuclear, there's a few things. I'll speak from like a very a limited American viewpoint, mine, and I don't know a lot about nuclear, but like you think about the show The Simpsons, like he Homer works at a nuclear plant, and it's silly, or you think about something more serious like Fukushima or Chernobyl. And that's the kind of thing that we go to, our minds go to. So I feel like that's kind of what you're talking about with misinformation or misconception.
Yes.
And I'll get into a post that you made on LinkedIn in a few minutes, but talk more to me about those misinformations or lack of information or misconceptions that you alluded to as it relates to nuclear energy.
The two major oppositions to nuclear energy is waste, the cost, and the safety. There are the minor ones of proliferation and the nuclear security. But majorly, there's always the waste, the cost, and the safety. Let's talk about cost now. In terms of cost, the misinformation in cost is the fact that we all know that it costs a lot to get a nuclear power plant running. To have it commissioned, it costs you a lot. Now, nobody goes ahead to tell you how much you need to keep it running for the next 60 to 70 years. So we just focus on that initial disadvantage, seemingly disadvantage that we have in the forefront. And then we forget about the numerous advantage that ends up canceling the initial disadvantage we thought of. That is a common misinformation in terms of cost of nuclear power plants. And then we talk about waste. They tell you, oh, it's so radioactive, it's hazardous, it causes cancer, it causes gene mutation. Very well, those are very right. We are not denying the fact that the radiation has the potential to cause this kind of harm. But we are trying to tell you that you are misinformed about what the nuclear industry does with the nuclear waste. We take our time to have this waste classified. And based on their classification, they are stored and disposed accordingly. I can't think of any industry that takes their time to get this done. I know in my country, when you have your solar panels and you exhaust it, I think it's about 12 years to 20 years thereabout. You just randomly put it in the trash, and so nobody cares about where it ends up. The same thing with wind. There is no detailed, no commitment from the industry that is responsible for this or the companies that produce this. You say, okay, when you exhaust the lifetime of your solar panel or your wind turbine, you send it back to us, we know what to do with it. Nobody does that. The same thing with the nuclear industry. So when you talk about the coal, the fossil fuel industry, they run on fossil and they just throw out carbon dioxide like into the atmosphere without any concern. Of course, recently we are talking about we hear discussions on carbon capture and all of that, carbon storage, but it was until the climate crisis became so glaring and we could see ourselves with imminent danger of climate crisis. So we began to think of how do we capture this carbon, store them, and find a proper way to dispose them. But this is the nuclear industry. From its very conception, it begins to think about its ways. Now, do you know that in the planning of a nuclear power plant, the planning of a nuclear power plant, which you know is going to run for 60 to 75 years, plan is being first made for the waste. This is the amount of waste we are expecting from a power plant of this size. This is the provision we are going to make to contain this waste. So why then do people capitalize on the waste if you have an industry that is taking full responsibility of the waste of its process? That is a misinformation and lack of information put together. Now, one problem I notice with lack of information is people just run with what they have. They do not really want to know more so that they don't get to challenge what they already know. You know, because I am already comfortable with this idea. So I just want to stick with this idea. I'm not going to put in effort to try to know more and see if this idea I have is actually what it is, or is it just what I picked off in news media and with all the bias it has, and I just run with it. So that is one issue with nuclear waste. So we have an industry that takes full responsibility of its waste from the very first day of the running of the nuclear power plant till the decommissioning. A plan is made, the waste is taken care of. We have geological repositories depending on the level of the waste based on classification. We have the ones that are stored in the spent fuel pool. There are processes when you talk about nuclear waste, it's not too complicated, but it's a well thought out plan that you see that you don't even have any reason to worry. Okay, the nuclear industry have been up and running for more than 60 years now. Have we had issue with nuclear waste? Then why do we still capitalize on nuclear waste? Why do we still hold nuclear waste as an opposition since we do not even have one single example to point to and say, oh, this is it, for example, like we have the Fukushima, unfortunately. So that brings the aspect of safety. What happened at Fukushima was quite unfortunate. But you would agree with me that it was not man-made. We saw a natural disaster that went far beyond the design basis of the nuclear power plant. So you wouldn't even fault the industry for being careless in this case. But the good thing is that happened and that taught us how to better design nuclear power plants to withstand natural disasters. So there was an earthquake in Japan, I think in February, and it was close to one of their nuclear reactors, and we did not hear anything. So the mistake of Fukushima taught us a lesson that we wholeheartedly learned, appreciate. It's quite unfortunate that it had to come in that way, but we accept it. And we picked up the pieces of what was left of the accident and tried to make out something from it. So today you have nuclear reactors that withstand natural disaster. What happened at Fukushima was when the earthquake first happened, the nuclear reactor withstood it firmly. Now there was a tsunami that followed after. It was the tsunami that went and shut down the emergency cooling system. That was where the meltdown came from. Because when the earthquake happened, there was an emergency system that took care of it. Now the tsunami came and shut down that emergency system. But today we do not have just one emergency system to take care of an accident. We have now multiple layers because we understand that an earthquake can happen, shuts down the reactor. The emergency system comes on to maintain temperature at the reactor. We also expect a second degree of a natural disaster to happen to that emergency power system. And then we make provisions such that even if there is a series of disaster coming after the first one, we have enough emergency system to cater for it. So Fukushima was a lesson that we learned. It was a painful lesson, but we learned it, we embraced it, and started to make something out of it. So when you talk about safety, safety has been well taken care of. And the good thing I can assure you about the nuclear industry is that it's an evergreen industry. The research does not stop. We never fold our hands and said, oh, we've known everything. I mean, we've been in operation 3 years. We should just sit down and keep running. No, every day, every universities have new research they are working on just to make things better and better and better until we have a very, very smooth industry where people can't even see an opposition to it. So safety is taken care of very well. The waste we take care of very well. The cost, we just need people to look at the cost from a long-term perspective. So minor people also talk about proliferation, using of nuclear elements for terrorism. The nuclear industry is a heavily regulated industry. So you can be rest assured that every gram of radioactive material in the world is accounted for by the International Atomic Energy Agency. The mining process involved in uranium is not something anybody can just wake up, or a group of people will wake up and begin to mine. It is so regulated that every single miner is known by the international body. So there is this very strong data control of nuclear materials. So proliferation is not an issue.
So we've talked a lot about what we do have up and running today, which is mainly coal, some water, some wind, some solar, some nuclear. Are we going to keep doing all four or more? Or like, what is the outlook? What is the goal of, I would hope there's a goal in reducing coal, but is that really the goal? Or like, what would you say? Are we just going to keep trying all four and see what sticks?
It's dependent on the environment. Of course, you can run all four, depending on the size of the country you are looking at. So let me take my country, for example. This is Africa. We still have very remote villages. We are taking down nuclear energy to them, really too expensive for them to pay. Now, I am looking at the costs from the angle of the fact that we have people that still live below a dollar. We are still battling poverty. So there are parts of Nigeria you cannot send electricity from a nuclear energy because of the costs on them. Not because nuclear energy is expensive, but because these people are still living below a dollar. They're still trying to feed properly. They're still trying to have potable, clean water. So they have basic amenities to sort out. So bringing down electricity from nuclear energy can be expensive for them. What do you do for those people? You give them solar. You give them wind. Now, this is where solar and wind come in. For me, I am very much in support of having all four running. If it is a community that has a good flow of river, you can think of building a mini dam for them, and with that, they can have a stable supply of electricity. So having all four running is actually a very nice idea, and it's something I've seen all countries go for. Even China, we know their energy demand is out of the graph, but still they have nuclear. They are building more than 10 nuclear reactors at a time. They have the highest supply of solar electricity in China. They also have wind, they have geothermal. You look at the size of China, you look at their energy demand, you see that, yeah, of course, I'm not saying that nuclear power plants can't cater for them, but I'm sure there are remote areas of China that would rather want to work with solar, which is more affordable to them, and wind, and probably hydro. So running on all four is actually a very good idea. Well, we need anything that to work, anything that work without giving out CO2.
Solar, wind, water, and nuclear. Between those
Very
four,
well.
where
Yes.
the goal is to move into the one of those four, based on what the country, what a particular area or region not only
Yeah.
can afford, but like
Yeah.
how developed they might be or what their needs are
Yes.
to get away from coal.
Right. That's the goal. We are looking at net zero 2050. We are looking at a global temperature that has an increment rate of at least 1.2 degrees centigrade. So to get to that point, we are supposed to be focused on these four agreed clean sources of energy. So whichever one serves the peculiarity of your environment, be free to adopt it.
I'm just happy to have this conversation to start sharing more about what we do and do not know, especially with the misinformation, misconceptions, and just understanding the different types of energy. In the US, I feel we're just running so fast. Let's just do something. And then there's not a lot of follow through. That's what I'm seeing a lot of in that case.
I think it's because of the individuality of this energy source. It is something you can do on your own. It's something I can do on my own. So there is no strong organization, there is no strong regulatory framework for this industry. So I just wake up, I go to the market, I buy solar panels to have it up in my roof, and that's all. No, it's none of the government's business. It's nobody's business. I have my electricity supplied, and that's all. Now, if there is issue, all I need to do is to get a maintenance person to come look at it and then see what to do. And that's all. There is no person to hold accountable. I think that is the problem. You're not going to come knock on my door and hold me accountable for my solar roof. I'm not going to listen to you. But you see, when in terms of nuclear industry, if anything goes wrong, you can go hold the International Atomic Energy Agency. You can hold the director general and say, okay, see, I found a gram of uranium at my backyard. Why is it there? And he's going to say, oh, my apologies, went out of regulatory control. And then he's going to hold whoever is in charge of regulation in my country. And then a lot of investigations is going to be done to find out how this 1 gram of uranium is in your. You know, the most interesting thing is that on every gram of uranium, on every package of uranium, there is the manufacturer's address, manufacturer's date, and the processing date. Everything is on it. So it can be traced, can easily be traced to where it came from. So there is accountability, there is responsibility, there is organization, there is enough regulation. In fact, a lot of us are even complaining of too much regulation. So this is one thing you find in the nuclear industry that you do not find in the other clean source of energy industry.
So as we start to wind down, Geraldine, if you would point us to resources or to talk to you, or like where would you point people if they want to learn more about their particular region in the world as it relates to nuclear or just about nuclear in general? Where would you point them?
The International Atomic Energy Agency has an archive of information. Once you go into their website, internet, www.iaea.org, you will find an archive of every information from the reactor systems operation to even non-power application of nuclear energy. So there is everything you need to know about nuclear on that single website. You can take courses, get certified in basic knowledge and understanding of nuclear. The IAEA website is an all-in-one website for anyone seeking to know anything and everything about nuclear. So there is also this other smaller agencies that are country peculiar. We have the Nigerian Atomic Energy Commission. We have the Nigerian Nuclear Regulatory Agency. On the websites of these organizations, you can find nuclear informations that are peculiar to Nigeria. So this cuts across every country. Each country has their own. I think the one for US is National Regulatory Commission. They have their website. You can go there and find informations, and there are, of course, contact informations. And when people argue about knowledge sharing in the nuclear industry, I tell them it's not what you think. We are not hiding. There's no one is hoarding knowledge. If you seek it, you will find it. The rest are sure to find it. But the only thing we're not going to do is to come to your house and knock on your door and tell you, do you know what is nuclear? We want you to accept nuclear. But once you go on the internet, you have a lot of information. You just need to follow one or two organizations that are committed to nuclear advocacy. And in fact, there are a lot of organizations that are committed to nuclear advocacy. But once you follow them, you get information on nuclear energy, both the power application and the medical and agricultural and industrial application of nuclear energy.
For this segment, because I want to have you back in the future, for this segment, for this time, what's the last thing you want us to know in today's segment?
Basically, today we spoke so much about nuclear. Yes. So, one thing I want everyone to know is that nuclear is not half as dangerous as you were taught. And make sure your knowledge of nuclear is not from the Simpsons. There are a whole lot of error there. So take your time, even if it's 30 minutes a week, and go through the International Atomic Energy Agency website. You will be marveled with how wrong you are about nuclear energy.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Thank you.